Beginning of Parshas Bamidbar speaks about Hashem speaking to Moshe in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first of the second month of the second year after the exodus from the land of Egypt, saying, "Take a census of the entire assembly of the children of Israel according to their families, by the number of the names, every male according to their head count." I'd like to learn together Mirat Hashem now a medrash which connects both the Parshas Bamidbar as well to the holiday of Shavuos that we are encountering very soon. Medrash is found in Yalkut Shimoni, source number 2. B'sha'ah shekiblu Yisrael zotarah, the moment the Jewish people accepted Torah, nitkanu umos ha'olam behem, the nations of the world were very jealous. Ma'aro litkarev yoter min ha'umos, hello? Why is it fair that Hashem is playing favoritism, giving the Torah only to the Jews and not to the nations? So what's Hashem's response? Very fascinating. Amar lam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, haviu li sefer yuchsin shelachem. Bring me your book of genealogy. Shenemar, havu la Hashem mishpachot amim, kishem shebanai mevi'im, vayit yaldu mishpachot am. In verse 18 it says, and they will be literally given birth on their families, which means they will be counted by their genealogical families. They had to bring a record. L'kach b'na'am b'rosh ha-sefer hazeh achar mitzvos. This is connection. The end of Parshat B'chukotai talks about these are the mitzvos Hashem commanded B'nai Yisrael in Har Sinai, commanded Moshe to tell B'nai Yisrael, and then counts the Jewish people. Connection is, what merit do we get the Torah over the nations, and the merit that we, when we were counted, we brought our Sefer Yuchsin, our genealogical record. There is an addition to this medrash, which is found in Source 5 in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that in the future, the Umos Ha'olam, the nations, will say, is it fair that Klum Kafita Aleinu Har Kegigis V'lo Klabnuha Kemosh Asul Yisrael? Is it fair on the Jewish people you forced the mountain upon their head and that's why they accepted it? Had you done that for us, we would also have accepted it. And the Gemara doesn't give an answer. We need to answer this question as well. Albeit, and Rav Pam notes in source number 4, a question comes to mind: before Hashem gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he offered to the nations. As we counted in the Gemara, each nation gave an excuse why it could not accept it. If so, why are they angry? Hashem chose to give the Torah to Klal Yisrael, not to them. It could have been given to them had they truly desired to accept it. So this really doesn't make any sense. Like, you're telling me, had we been given it, we would have accepted it. They didn't accept it. They were offered it. And further, we have to understand when Be'er Moshe points out in Source 5, in what way is Hashem's the answer, Aviu li sefer yuchsin shelachem, in response to the nations? Because you have yichus, you have this genealogical record, that's the reason you should get the Jewish people should get the Torah over the nations of the world? I would have given the answer. They said, now seven Ishmael. They said, we're ready to do it, and you didn't. So what is this answer that Hashem is giving? It seems to make absolutely no sense. Just to take these ideas one step further, we'll just add to this the question. The pasuk Vayijaldu Mishpachotam is a challenging expression. Vayijaldu is lashon hitpa'el, it's reflexive. It should say hitpadu, they were counted by their families. Vayijaldu, we have to understand that formulation of as if they gave birth to themselves by their families. So that will be a secondary question we'll touch on. Just to further this discussion, Rav Yisrael Meir Druk in Eish Tamid in Source 6a and Source 6b brings a very famous Maharit, which I'm sure a lot of us have been discussing in this particular calendar year. And that is, he brings a scenario, which we had this year, that the eighth day of Pesach in Chutz La'aretz comes out on Shabbos. So the people in Eretz Yisrael read Parshas Achrimot, and the people in America or in Chutz La'aretz, wherever they may be, will read Shmini Shel Pesach. And then what you have, which is what we have this year, you have a gap where the B'nai Chutz La'aretz are, so to speak, 1 week behind the people in Eretz Yisrael, and are only get caught up in Parshas Matos Masseh way at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. And the Maharit asks the very basic question. In a regular year, oftentimes we will connect together Parshas Achrimot Kedoshim. Those are a pair. So do us all a favor. Read Shmini Shel Pesach on Shabbos. The following week, when B'nai Eretz Yisrael are reading Kedoshim, instead of B'nai Chutzlars just reading Parashat Achrei Mos. Let them read Achrei Mos Kedoshim, and in 1 week they've caught up, and we're aligned together. Why is it that we don't do that? It would make so much more sense. And he brings down the answer in the asterisks in 6a, V'eshiv harbei tachur b'shonim l'chaber karo parashiyot, so that we'd have them together. V'chol atzmam lo tachu ele shiyu korim b'midbar Sinai kodim l'tzera. And the reason in general, in a regular year, why we double up so many parashiyot, sometimes to 300 tzorah together, achrei mos kedoshim together, b'har v'chu kosai together, so many parashiyot in Sefer Yikra are together, it's for one reason. We want to get b'midbar right before Shavuos. As they say, Umasru Siman Manu V'atru. You count, and then you have Atzeret, then you stop for the holiday of Shavuos. Why? So he brings down the very famous Chazal that Ezra had that Klal Yisrael should read the Tochacha, the rebuke, the curses, 2 weeks before the Yom HaDin. So Rosh Hashanah is a Yom HaDin, a Day of Judgment. So we read Parshas Bechukosai, Parshas Kitovo, 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. Bechukosai is also Tochacha. Shavuos is also Yom HaDin. It's a Day of Judgment for how much Ruchni or spirituality we'll have for the year. So in most years, we don't read it directly, you always want to have some break, some buffer. But on awakening, you better do tshuva so that you should be worthy of the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. So Bechukosai is read 2 weeks before Shavuos, and Bamidbar is always right before Shavuos. In worst case scenario, like this here in Eretz Yisrael, it will be read with Chukosai 3 weeks, right, a 2 week break of Bamidbar and Nusso before Shavuos. Again, what is it that Bamidbar has to be right before Shavuos? And this is just creating or begging our question in the bracket in 7. Mevoar b'dvarav goda chashivas yukorim parshas b'midbar kodem atzeret. Shechemat ken yesh lafrida kriya shal b'nei chutzlaretz ma'kriya shal b'nei Eretz Yisrael zvam rubako kach kadei sheyachlu b'nei chutzlaretz likro parshas b'midbar kodem atzeret. So we achinami, in this year, in Eretz Yisrael, you can't do anything about it. You can't add a parsha. So we're 2 weeks between Bamidbar and Nusso, away from Shavuos. But if we have a possibility that somewhere in the world, Jews can have Bamidbar right before Shavuos, let's do that. And let's have that separation between the Jews and Chutzlaretz, the Jews and Eretz Yisrael, even if it means that we're on different pages, which we don't like to do, we like to have unity. Even if it means different pages, we'd rather have that so that somebody should have Bamidbar right before Shavuos, because that's really where Bamidbar belongs. It belongs right before the holiday of Shavuos. We have to ask ourselves, what is it, Parshas Bamidbar, that is so important to have before Shavuos? Which gets us back to that original medrash that there must be something about bringing their Sefer Yuchsin, bringing their Vayijaldu al Toldotam, Amishpachotam, bringing their Sefer Yuchsin, bringing their genealogical records and being counted is the answer that Hashem gives, the quintessential answer of why the Jews are deserving of getting the Torah, and hence we have Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos. So again, the question becomes, well, what is this answer? So it's this question that I'd like to look at on a number of levels. Level number one. There is an idea that's brought down in the Chemda Shlomo, that when a person does something against their will, the asterisks in 8, but rather he's forced to do it, Ein ha'siyah mitjachesed lav klal, he's really not given credit because he's really no intention of doing it. There's one exception to that. And that's a very famous Rambam that's often quoted. And that's a forced get, a forced divorce document, that if a divorce document has to be given me something for free will, say if a man does not want to divorce his wife, you can literally force him. Do whatever you need to do. Beat him up until he'll give this document. And if he gives a document under such circumstances, it's a valid document. A divorce document can only be given if he's merutzon out of free will, out of desire. So the Rambam says that the essence of a Jew is the desire to do the will of God. Sometimes the Yitzhara gets in the way. Since every Jew wants to be connected, that every Jew, core Jew, wants to be doing the mitzvos. The Yitzro Shetakvo, but his Yitzhara, his evil inclination, gets the better of him. Therefore, when you beat him up, and again, whatever that may mean, his inclination gets weakened, and his true will comes out. Source 9, here's the key for today. We'll develop this Amir Tzashem, if we are with Divrei Rambam. We see from the words of the Rambam, Shenekuda Pnimi Shala Adam, the core of every person, Mishtokeket L'Kiyum HaMitzvos, wants to do the will of God. El Shayetzer Tokei from Afriya, you know, there's a Yitzhara, Seema Shinara, Tifu, that's not kosher, there's many Yitzhara. V'lachen Kasher Kofim Oto, Harei Uchazir, L'Tzano TV. But when he's forced, then he comes back to his natural desire. So that we can explain now that our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Hishrishu banu, the arrow in 9, they impressed upon us, they gave us over as a genetic DNA in all generations, this Nekuda Pnimi, what we call this Pintel Yid, Hashoefen Mishtokeket Lasot Tamir Ritzona Barret, that really wants to do the will of God. And Im Kein Tchunazu Tvuah banu, it is instilled in us by the fact that we are its descendants. And therefore I can appreciate now that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the mountain over our head and forced us, the forcing us is similar to the example of the Rambam and the Get. What is being brought out is our natural inclination and desire to do the will of God. That's why had Hashem put the mountain over the Goyim's head, even if they would have, when they would have been forced, it wasn't going to come from a place of really wanting to do it. It was going to be coming from a place of being forced. And when you're doing something you really don't want to do, then it really doesn't count. So when the Jewish people are accepting the Torah, they're accepting the Torah and being forced. Kafalim har kikiki, that being forced, the mountain over their head, is just bringing out their natural inclination to really do the will of Hashem. So now I can appreciate why Vayigaldu Mishpechotam Leveid Avotam, that being counted by the father's house, bringing your genealogical records, is the crucial answer. V'zeu Ikar Sibah, the asterisk, Shayuyu Yucholim Lekabel Totorah Mitokvia, Kivan Shehem Yuchasim Lavos HaKadoshim, Harei Memele Yishlam Et Kokorot Glim Shela Avos Shemishtokim Pimutam Lekabel Lekem Ritzon HaBarei. Why is this the answer? Because what we're saying is we are connected to the Avos HaKadoshim. We are connected to the forefathers. And since what the forefathers have given us as what they bequeathed to us is a basic desire to do the will of God, albeit sometimes we may forget this, so us being forced, we're not now doing something against our will, it's rather bringing out what our will is. How do we prove that this is indeed the case, that a Jew really wants to do the will of God? The Sefer Yuchsi, the genealogical record, which shows that we are connected to our forefathers, and this is something that's part and parcel of who we are. So every year when we read Parshas Bamidbar, and we talk about reenacting the Mamad Har Sinai and Shavuos of getting the Torah, and once again Hashem putting the mountain over our head and forcing us to keep Torah, our response is, this is really what we want. And we remind ourselves, this is what we want, because each and every one of us, as we are being counted, as we're being singled out, we remind ourselves that we really come from our forefathers. Now, let's not forget, as the Be'er Moshe points out here, that Klal Yisrael originally said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we're ready to do, which is, double underline 11, Davar mochiach shim pnim nafsham shlimahi ito yitbara. Before Hashem put the mountain over their head, and we'll Mirza Hashem talk more about this next week, the dynamics, but Klal Yisrael said, Na'aseh v'nishma, again, their core being was wanting to do the will of God. Haynu b'koach mareshet avoteinu k'toshim, Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. And therefore, even if they're being forced, it's really a force that's a reflection of a deeper desire to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which, in Source 12, is different from the nations. Now, you may ask yourself, if you're to tell me that they're connected to the forefathers, well, I have a little secret to tell you. Esau's connected to Yitzchak and Avraham. Shmuel's connected to Avraham. The other nations are also biological children of the Avos, which the Be'er Moshe answers. The difference is that Klal Yisrael, Ma'achar Shehem Chafetzim Likasher B'Kedusha, they have wanted throughout to tap into this Kedusha, which is not true of the Umos, that even though they may be the biological children, they've never been able to access. They never really acknowledge that type of wanting to follow in that way. And therefore, we would say, in biological terms, it's a recessive gene that over time has just, so to speak, died out. While Klal Yisrael, by saying Nasa V'Nishma, have been able to say, this is who we are. And this says the Be'er Moshe, in Source 13, the language of Vayit Yeldu, the Ramaz Bazeb in the Shon Hitba'el, reflexive, Ki Yisrael Garmu Ki'ilu Leida Mechudeshet Lavot. It's as if every Jew in Klal Yisrael says, I want to remake myself to be in that image of the Avos HaKadoshim. A Jew understands that they have the ability to form themselves, to connect themselves to this image of what the forefathers are about, and it's as if Nodu Mechadash, they are born again. And that's why it doesn't say Vaypakdu, that they're being counted, but Vayit Yaldu, that they themselves, every Jew, said, we are inherently part of this nation, and we're part of this genetic DNA, and we want to connect with this. And indeed, as Rav Olson points out, aside from the rational belief in God, there is, however, an entirely different type of belief in God, the belief with which a Jew is born. Every Jew knows that there's a God in the same instinctive way he knows how to breathe. He doesn't have to be taught it. He doesn't have to figure it out through logic. It's a knowledge that comes from the deepest level of being. He may not be able to justify this knowledge intellectually or even to articulate it clearly, but it's there within him. It's hereditary knowledge. Just as migratory birds have a homing instinct, every Jew has an innate sense of direction, a built-in compass that directs him towards his source, towards his Father in heaven. Since Amunah is hereditary, we can trace its inheritance back of time to the Rosh Maminim, to Avram Avinu. Here too, Avram was not merely the first believer, he was the father of all believers. Later generations were believers because they inherited their belief from him. Avram was the father of all believers and the father of belief itself. Due to Avram, every Jewish soul is endowed with Amunah as a natural inheritance. The Sivah Shalom in Sefer Shmot, talks about this by the burning bush that was not consumed. When Moshe Rabbeinu sees this, he wonders, why isn't the bush consumed? And Hashem responds, you know, this land that you're standing on is holy land, take off your shoes. On a symbolic level, the Sivah Shalom explains in Source 14, HaMakom Asher Tal Meidolav Merumazal B'nei Yisrael. Not literally the land that you're standing on, but the people that you're speaking about are holy people. And therefore, take off your shoes, Klal Yisrael, Kodesh Kedoshim. And even though they're Mushkab and Memtah Shari Tumah, they've come down to the 49th level of impurity, Kayem B'Koach Amunah, they still have Amunah. And he quotes Marami Lokvitz, who says that a Jew has to believe that he believes. And even if he doesn't feel like he believes, no, Ki B'Pnimiyos Nafsha. In the innermost soul, he's a believer. Ma'amin hu, Ella, rather, Shavi mechasim min ator munah. There may be a lot of things that are covering up the light of belief, but hamunah mushreshim pnim nafsho shiudim avotav mavod avoteinu. But this belief is something that's part and parcel of us. As the Medrash Shva Rabba says, Banai ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim hei. My children are believers, the son of believers. And that's the sneh that's bo'er ba'esh. And a sneh nenu kal, that every situation we're in, Klal Yisrael has that koach hamunah, and they will never be consumed. You know, the story that comes to mind, it's a story that perhaps I've shared many years ago, but appropriate for now as well. It's a story that happened to me over 15 years ago. We first moved to Eretz Yisrael. We had a very big 7-seater car. One of my students wanted to go with me and my girls to Ashdod, to a separate beach. So here it is, Friday in the summer, and we're off to go to Ashdod to a separate beach. And I was leaving Motzei Shabbos to America on a trip, so it wasn't like, you know, I didn't have what to do, but okay, we'll go in the morning, we'll be back in the afternoon, we'll manage. So we set off to the Ashdod beach, and wasn't the time of Waze in those days. We're going back again around 15 years. So we're driving around Ashdod, and I could see the separate beach, right, but I couldn't actually get there. So I did something that wasn't too intelligent, that I people say publicly, I decided that if we just cut through, we could get to the beach. So I started driving on the sand. Well, my friends, I think you can figure out what happened. So here I am, stuck with this heavy car in the middle of the sand, unable to move. So I tell the student to take my girls down to the beach, and I will deal with it. And here, I'm sorry my girls didn't witness what transpired. It was very powerful, and again, I don't own a smartphone even now, 15 years later, so here's the story. I called the Shagrir, which is the local AA, and I said, I'm stuck. Where are you stuck? In Ashdod. We're exactly on the beach. Where? Well, you know, beaches don't really have road signs. So it's between the water and the street. And I'll trust me, I'm the only car stuck there. I think you'll be able to find me. So they said, give us 5 hours. It's like 110 degrees on Friday, stuck in the beach for 5 hours. This was not going to be such a pleasant experience. So as I'm sitting on the beach, a few minutes later, the sky is all good, a few boys come along. These boys are a Sephardi background, and without kippot on. And they're like, you know, between 18 and 22 in that age range. And they come over to me, and in a very straightforward way, say, you know, this is really a stupid thing that you've done. I say, yeah, I agree. You know, I got it. Like, thanks for telling me. I figured that out. Yeah. So they went and bought boards to try to put under the wheels to, you know, then, you know, allow it to move. But the car was so heavy that Gordashelfen, that really didn't work. So these boys didn't give up. They came back a few minutes later with a bunch of friends, and they tried pushing the car out, and that didn't work either. So these boys still didn't give up. They took the Jeep, and they connected the back of the car to the Jeep, and they told me to get out of the front seat. I didn't mind giving them the keys to the car. We weren't going anywhere. And one guy sits in the driver's seat, and the rest of the chevra goes, Chad, Shaim, Shalosh, 1, 2, 3. They jump onto the Jeep to weigh it down all at once, shoo, and the car is extricated from the sand. Now, here was the poignant moment. They did it. It was their brilliance. It was their perseverance. It was their brilliance. They didn't give up hope. What do they do at that moment? They get up, they form a circle, and they start dancing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Anechnu Ovim Otcha, Hashem, we love you. And they start singing and dancing, thank you to Hashem for doing this. This is what it's about. This is the core of who a Jew is. That one moment in the sand was like one of the most special moments I've had in Eretz Yisrael, of saying, this is it, at Snei, no bar beish. You wear kippot, you don't wear kippot. You wear tzitzit, you don't. It doesn't really, I mean, obviously it matters. But the core of who we are is Maminim B'nei Maminim. Thank you, Hashem. Kodesh Baruch Hu, Anachnu Ovim Otchem. That is what it's all about. And that we got from Avraham Avinu. And indeed, as the Darash Mordechai points out, Rav Mordechai Druk in 17, based on the Nefesh HaChaim, the Ruach HaChaim, Rav Chaim of Elushin on Pirkei Avos, he says that's why in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos, when it talks about their 10 generations between Adam and Noach and Avraham, it uses just Noach and Avraham. But when it talks about the 10 trials that Avraham went through, it says Avraham Avinu. Because when it talks about the trials, when it talks about the persona, when it talks about Meisa Avot Sima Lubanim, that it's really paved a path for who we are, it's Avinu, he's our father. He experienced this and really created like the pathways in our psyche, in our genetic DNA, to be able to go through these experiences and come out on the other side. And that's why he says in Source 18, when a Jew is able to die of Kiddush Hashem, that comes from the Akedah. And he says, and this a lot, people who've made Aliyah can really appreciate, V'chein in the Da'at Ha'it Oru La'adam Pitom Lelech La'eretz HaKodesh Hei Misayor L'lech Lecha. If you suddenly get this urge to pick up your entire family and your entire life, your livelihood, and say, you know what, I'm making Aliyah. And when people look at you as you're crazy, how could you do this, you say, I'm just tapping into the path that was forged by Avram Avinu. Avram, our forefather, Lech Lecha, I'm just following literally in his footsteps. This is the nature of a Jew, and this is where Hashem says, I gave them the Torah and not you the Torah. I gave them the Torah, Havi'u alai sefer yuchsin. Have you followed in the ways? Have you attached yourself? Has this been a dominant gene of yours, which the Jews have? Just to take this idea one step deeper, there's a very famous medrash in Eicha, in Source 18, that once one of the elders of Athens went to a boy in Yerushalayim, who were known for brilliance. And this elder of Athens says, can you bring me some eggs and some cheese? He brought it to him. And then the elder said to him, can you tell me which cheese is from a white goat and which is from a dark goat? To which the child answered, look at these eggs. Can you tell which comes from a white hen and which comes from a dark hen? Now, obviously, there's more to this, and we will not chicken out. And we will understand what this medrash is about. Source 19. The elder of Athens is saying, when you look at the cheese, one cheese looks like another cheese. You look at the Jewish people, who at that time were not holding, it's time of gullus, the time of destruction, and you look at the non-Jews, like, there's no difference between us. To which the boy answers, you may not see a difference, but you take these eggs and you put them under a hen, and you allow it to warm up and hatch, you will see that one egg will be white and one egg will be dark, which means on the outside, Jews and the non-Jews may be similar, but when it comes to being able to stand up in times of heat to what they believe in, you will see that there's a difference, and a Jew is ready to die a Kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Feldman understands this medrash in depth, adds a different dimension, and this is in the Sefer, the Juggler and the King. He says, can a fetus or an infant be considered chosen by God? Yes, says Rabbi Yoshua, because holiness is not necessarily a function of performance of mitzvos. It's stamped into Jewish people at even an earlier stage, in the seed of which they were born, which is again that model of the egg. The Jewish nation has three signs. They are merciful, they have a sense of shame, and they do kindness. It's no mere figure of speech that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov call the fathers of Jewish people. Fathers pass on the genetic code to their offspring. So do these fathers too invest their descendants with their spiritual essence. To them, a yearning for closeness to God was an inherent trait of their soul, and as a result, a Jew is born with an innate affinity for meriters of holiness. These three characteristic, as the sages teach us, are that Jews are merciful, they have a sense of shame that makes them morally restrained, and they're kind and generous. No nation is as concerned with the needy, the underprivileged, and the downtrodden as the Jews are. No nation is as faithful to a spouse and family as the Jews are. No nation is as generous of self and wealth as the Jewish nation. These distinctively Jewish traits are not a product of one's observance of the laws of Torah. Even non-observant Jews have these same characteristics, if not at their highest peak of development, at least to a greater degree than any other nation. They're not product of one's environment, for they're part of Jewish nation throughout history. They are part of our genetic DNA. And that's why you will find that, you know, save the whale, save the water, save the world, save whatever W you wish, Jews usually are the ones who are in charge of this. This is part of who we are. 22. A Jew's innate sensitivity to non-materialistic values gives rise to an attitude of refusing to accept selfishness and materialism as a life goal. Spirituality, by definition, the antithesis of selfishness and materialism becomes a sword for alternative. This means, this is the definition of Jewish chosenness. It does not mean physical or mental superiority. It simply means that Jews feel the need for spiritual content in their lives. If Jewish chosenness were a function of the people's performance of commandments, the elder's argument would be valid, for then certainly infants and unborn would have no claim to be chosen. But this premise is incorrect. 23, the Jews' chosenness is unrelated to merit. It's part of the inherent character, which the fathers bequeathed them. They have not earned it, nor they can escape it. It's part and parcel of their essential being. The cheese made from white goat's milk is distinct from that made of the black goat's milk, though this is not visible to the eye. The difference between them is a genetic one. The same is true about the difference between the Jewish people and the rest of the nation. Our challenge, which to end the first level, is to be able to recognize that this is part of our genetic DNA. We are connected. We have the Sefer Yuchsin. We have this genetic DNA to be part of the Avos HaKadoshim. We are Maminim B'nei Maminim. We are believers. We are people who have a different set of values in the world around us, and hence we were chosen. And that's the argument. Bring your Sefer Yuchsin. Let's see your lineage. Let's see if you've also held on to this genetic DNA. Our challenge is not just Maminim B'nei Maminim to be believers, but to be able to act on this belief. Rabbi Tass, in the Jewish Thinking Teenager's Guide to Life, says that emunah really doesn't mean faith. The answer is emunah does not mean faith, the asterisk in 26. Faith or belief, as those ideas are understood in the modern culture, have nothing to do with emunah. The correct translation of emunah is not faith, but faithfulness and loyalty. When you've acquired the spiritual knowledge, when you know clearly what meets the eye is not all that there is. When you know that Hashem exists, you know that it expects of you. The question is, will you be loyal to that knowledge? Will you live up to it? Will you fulfill your obligation? The problem of Muna is not how to gain the knowledge of the spiritual world. It's the challenge of being faithful to that world and its obligation. And Muna is really about ne'amanut, faithfulness. And hence we understand that what Moshe Rabbeinu, it's described that his hands were raised up, Vahi Yadev Amunad Bo HaShemesh, in the war of Amalek, which happened to be right before Shavuos. Yeah, that war. His hands were faith until the morning? No, they were faithful until the morning. We know we have this genetic DNA to be Rahmanim, Baishanim, Gomle Chasadim, to have these character traits. Are we living up to it? We have a spiritual affinity to come close to God, to want to have this godliness and spirituality in our life. Are we living up to it? This is the question that we need to ask ourselves. This is the question, Mamish Erev Shavuos, where Shavuos is the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment, of have we lived up to this spiritual heritage that we have, and will God grant us many more opportunities of closeness to Him? Parsha B'Midbar is a time to introspect. Where am I in terms of my faithfulness to these very character traits that are embedded and inherited, Avinu, Avram Avinu, within us? That's, my friends, is level number one. Level number two is the Shvilei Pinchas. The Shvilei Pinchas speaks about, this is source number 28, there's a Medrash that describes the first pasuk, Hashem spoke to Moshe Midbar Sinai. Why do you say Midbar Sinai? Our sages learn from here that the Torah is given with three things, with fire, with water, and the Midbar. From where do we know that it was given with fire? Har Sinai was smoking in its entirety because Hashem descended upon it with fire. From where do we know it was given with water? For it says, even the heavens trickled, even the clouds drip water. And from where do we know it was given in the Midbar? Hashem spoke to Moshe in Midbar Sinai. Now, the Rav Yehuda Meir Shapiro, the Rosh Yeshiva Chochmei Lublin, says that these three elements, fire, water, and Midbar, and desert, connect with another Gemara. The Gemara says, from where do we know that the words of Torah are not retained except by the one who kills himself on its behalf? For it's stated, this is the Torah of a man who dies in the tent. If we reflect upon the history of the Jew people, we find that the trait of a serious nefesh, self-sacrifice, has been ingrained in their beings ever since they received the Torah at Har Sinai. When forced by the wicked of the nations of the world to renounce their faith in Hashem and His Torah, they did not fear being burnt at the stake, they did not hesitate to expose their necks for slaughter, they refused to betray their Torah, their faith in Hashem at any cost. And this is what the Medrash means. The Torah is given with these three things. In this manner, three extraordinary examples of Mesiras Nefesh stand out in the annals of history that are related to fire, water, and Midbar. They paved the way for all Jews throughout the generation to be ready and willing to sacrifice their lives for the sake of Hashem and His Torah. Why is Parsha B'Midbar right before receiving of the Torah? To teach a person that the elements needed in order to be able to be successful in receiving the Torah, you need to have these three elements, fire, water, and midbar. These elements, says Rosh Yeshiva Chochmei Lublin, is what it means, Vayyaldua, that they were counted, they were connected with their Sefer Yuchsin. How so? Because the Jew is able to bring back examples of where people were ready to die, to give of themselves, or to live in these three elements. You have at the bottom fire. Avraham Avinu was thrown in by the Medrash says by Nimrod into the fiery furnace. If you want to prefer pshat, the Chumash says he took the fire in his hand when he went to go and slaughter Yitzchak Avinu. We then have the water. Source 29, Nachshon, Shevet Yehuda, went up to their necks in the water in Kriyas Yavsuf before the water split. We're ready to go in. Whatever you say, Hashem said, go into the water. They're ready to go into the water. And Midbar, desert, we know, Zacharti Lachesen Nurayach, Avak Lotay, Lechtach Achara, B'Midbar Elar Slos Ruah. They went in a desert without any amenities, without an air-conditioned bus. Hashem, you're telling us to go? They're ready to follow Hashem at any cost. Daughter went today up north, 12th grade trip to Kivrei Tzadikim. And when she looked at the list, they gave her a list of all the Rambam and the Ramchal and Rabbi Akiva and, you know, the Rashbi and Rabbi Meir Balanes. She said, wow, all these places have a bathroom and have water. Right. This is great. Amenities, right? This is not what Klal Yisrael said. They didn't look at the list and say, well, no bathroom, no water. How are we going to manage this trip? No, we're ready to go. That was the greatness of Klal Yisrael. And this, we now understand when the nation, Source 30, said, why don't we receive the Torah? Hashem says, bring me your genealogical records. B'nai Yisrael have a legacy in the asterisks of 30, a Sefer Yuchsin from their holy ancestors who sacrificed their lives for the Kedusha of Hashem in three stages, fire, water, and midbar, are worthy to be given the Torah. Their claim is founded on the established fact that they will continue the way of the forefathers to sacrifice their lives for the sake of the Torah. You, however, the nations of the world, the descendants of Esav and Yishmael, your Sefer Yuchsin, does not contain any acts of bravery, demonstrating Mesiras Nefesh to Hashem and His Torah. In fact, the opposite is true. You received a heritage that denies the authority and validity of Hashem and His Torah, which allows you to pursue the nonsensical whims of Olam Hazeh. You have emulated the ways of the wicked Esav, who sold Yaakov's valuable birthright in exchange for some lentil soup. From Yishmael, you inherited the tendency to frolic with the Avodah Zarah, morality, and murder. So how do you expect to receive the Torah that demands Mesiras Nefesh in order to retain it? Where the Am Segula, Segol, the vowel, Segol, no matter which way you turn it, retains that shape. That, says the Shem Shmuel, is the beauty of Klal Yisrael. Wherever we are ready to become the Am Segula, that threesome, whether fire, water, and midbar, we are ready to follow Kadosh Baruch Hu in all situations. Show me your Sefer Yuchsin. My children have unrivaled Sefer Yuchsin, have an unrivaled Sefer Yuchsin. It's the merit of that trait of Mesiras Nefesh. They inherited from the forefathers that they entitled to receive the Torah. So my friends, when we talk about the Sefer Yuchsin, on the first level, the Sefer Yuchsin is that almost genetic DNA that you need to have a microscope or a lab to be able to decipher between the cheese from the white goat to the dark goat. On the second level, you don't need that. The Sefer Yuchsin is where the Jewish people have proven themselves, starting with the Avos and then in their descendants, in the Shevet Yehuda, in all of Am Yisrael following after Hashem. Our Sefer Yuchsin is, our genealogical record, is history and people that we have followed suit. We're ready to do anything to follow in the ways of Hashem. That, says Hashem, that type of Sefer Yuchsin isn't just a passive book, it's an active book, it's a dynamic book, and that's the book that makes them worthy and you not worthy. Idea number three. Be'er Moshe. When it talks about Esav, just very briefly, three, and then we'll focus on four, Meir Hashem. Pasuk says, in Bereshit Lamed Vav Vav, in Source 33, Vayikach Esav and Nashav, Esav took his wives, Ve'banav, and his children, men, boys, v'benotav, and his girls, v'kol nefashot v'tov, and all the souls of his house, and he went. When Yaakov Avinu, by him it says, v'hi kol nefesh yotzei yerech Yaakov, shivi nefesh, and all those that came from Yaakov were 70 souls. It uses a singular, nefesh, one. By Esav, it uses nefashot, many. What's our sefer, you'll see? Why is it such an imperative that we have this sefer Bamidbar before we have the Torah? To remind us, what is our sefer, you'll see in our genealogy? That we are nefesh echad, the Jewish people are one. Vayichan Sham Yisrael neged Ahar, Rashi tells us, Vayichan in the singular, and they encamp ki'ish echad b'lev echad. As one person, as one heart. What makes the Sefer Yuchsin of the Jew different than the nations of the world, and my friends, we see this over and over again, is that a Jew is ready to help out another Jew, no matter who they are, stripe, color, kippah, hat, head, doesn't matter. A Jew concerned about another Jew. You have Jewish boys in Japan, everyone is concerned about them. You have Jews in Iran who are in trouble, everyone is concerned about them. You have Jews in Houston who have been affected by, you know, the hurricanes. Jews come together to... This is what it's about. Jews throughout the world. When one Jew is in pain, all Jews are there to hold them up. We have the most beautiful Sefer Yuchsin, the most beautiful genealogical record. Shivim Nefesh, 70 soul, not nefashot, plural, not souls like Esav, soul. We are one soul. We are one unit. And we've heard stories, and apparently they're true, of people who will put on a kippah of many different shades and colors if they get a flat tire going up to the mountains. And, you know, a Jew will pull over and help change the tire, and they'll say, you know, they won't say this, but, you know, are you really Jewish? And they'll freely say no. But we were told that if you wear one of those things on your head, a Jew will pull over and help you change the tire. That's what it's about. The Goyim know this. Mi ka'amcha Yisrael, Goy echad baretz. Who is like you? One nation in the land. What is our Sefer Yuchsin? The unity that the Jewish people have. The deep feeling, yes, there's a lot of challenge between us. Granted. But deep down, we're nefesh echad vayichan sham Yisrael. So my friends, let's see what we've seen till now, and we'll end with one final idea, which really brings us full circle to the first idea. What was the nation said? Hey, it's not fair. Why are you giving them the Torah? Hashem says, you know what? They have a Sefer Yuchsin. Where's your Sefer Yuchsin? When they say, well, why did you force us to give the Torah? What's the answer to this? So here's the answer. On level number one, when we force them to give the Torah, it's just bringing out who they are. The Nasa V'Nishma, a Jew by nature, the genetic disposition that they have attached themselves to, is Avram Avinu, is this Mamini B'nei Mamini, we are believers. And this is the prerequisite to get the Torah, that we follow in the ways of the Avos HaKadoshim, Maishanim, Rachmanim, Gomlei Chasadim, these midos, these special character traits, feeling of shame, of giving, of being merciful. This is why we were worthy of the Torah. That's our Sefer Yuchsin, which the Umos HaOlam don't have to this extent. And that's why we know, and Rabbi Feldman brings this down as a footnote, that many non-Jews want to marry Jewish men, because they're good husbands, right? This is something, it's a davar yadua. The second idea, what's the Sefer Yuchsin? It's the fact that we have proven our love for Hashem. That's our Sefer Yuchsin. That's our genealogical greatness. We fire, water, and desert. We've been ready to die al Kiddush Hashem, no matter what situation. That makes us worthy for the Torah. That's our Sefer Yuchsin. Number three, our Sefer Yuchsin, is that we are a nation that is Goy Echad Ba'aretz, Nefesh, Shivi Nefesh. That's the greatest Sefer Yuchsin you have, that one Jew cares for another. The final idea, which is a little bit different, is the Tasha Rebbe. Source 34. Ubechozo Matzinu Kilasi Lavo, the nations are going to say, you know, Hashem, it's really not fair. What's not fair? They'll say, you know, when you asked us if we wanted to receive the Torah, you asked us something that was against our nature. And that really isn't fair. And then you didn't force us to do it. You just asked us, and we said no. By the Jews, you didn't tell them something. Like, you didn't give them a preview. And therefore, they didn't think it was going to be anything bad. So then when you force them, in their mind, you're just forcing them to do things that they want. It'd be like, you know, if I say to a kid, can I give you food? And they think that I'm just going to give them ice cream and lollipops. And they say, and I say, I'm going to force you to eat. They say, sure, no problem. Ice cream, lollipops, that's great. Right? Here you ask us, you know, do I want to eat, you know, spinach? No, I don't want to eat spinach. So, like, you know, had you forced us with something that was palatable, you know, maybe we would have also done it. You didn't force us, right? You didn't give us something that would have been tempting to us. By the Jews, you didn't show them something that was dislikeful for them. So it's really not fair that when you force them, they're being forced. It's not like the same had you forced us, because you didn't even present us with something that was tempting. Like, how can you compare spinach to ice cream? So, why didn't you at least give them a mitzvah that was against their will and then force them? Then that would have been an equal footing. The Kedei Listom, the end of 34, Epia Umos, Mitana Tamzu, in order to quiet the nations, Hashem says, you're wrong. I did give them a trial mitzvah against their will. I gave them one mitzvah, Imam at Har Sinai. That mitzvah was Hagbalah. You're not allowed to go up the mountain. That was their trial mitzvah. Why? So beautiful in the bracket. Ki tivo shobar Yisrael hu larutz acharei Hashem. The nature of a Jew is to run after Hashem. And therefore, their trial was, what went against their nature was, I want you to stand back and hold yourself back from being able to have a close relationship with Hashem. For a Jew, that was painful, right? You know, crowd control. That's where it began. Like, you can't go up this mountain. You got to stay down there. And for the Jew to be able to receive this and say, okay, I'm not going up the mountain, and whatever else you tell me, I'm ready to receive, that was what was unique about the Jewish people's acceptance of the Torah that the Goyim didn't have. Rabosai, let's take this idea a little bit deeper, a little bit further. This is the greatest gift that every Jew has, and this is the Yesod HaRishon, that to understand what Torah is about, it's to recognize that inherently we have a Ratzon, we have a desire to do Hashem's will, and our challenge and our megama, our focus in this world, is to be able to take away all that blocks us, and to be able to do the will of Hashem and bring that Ratzon to fruition. And hence, to look at this on two different aspects, Rav Pam, 37. Perhaps the answer is that the response is, in fact, not that incomprehensible. They turned down the opportunity to receive the Torah, but when they saw that Jewish people gained by accepting it, they regretted the refusal and had complaints and feelings of jealousy. When the nation said, hey, how come you didn't give it to me? Well, you know, you refused it. Yeah, but it's feelings of jealousy. It's similar to the reaction, unfortunately, some yeshiva students and all of us express from time to time. For example, a bocher is enrolled in a good yeshiva with excellent rabbeim. All his needs are taken care of. Unfortunately, he does not utilize this opportunity. Instead, wasting his time with narishkeit, weeks, months, and eventually years go by. And his years of youth are forever gone. And then when he's out of yeshiva and he has occasion to meet former classmates, who today are Tamidei Chachamim, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbani, learn about Abatim, his heart fills with jealousy and contempt. Why were these fellows brought close to Torah successes by Yeshiva and Arabim? And I was not. I had better intellectual capabilities than some of them. Why did I make it? It's the fault of the Yeshiva administration, the Rabbein, Mashkiach, etc. He conveniently forgot, says Rav Pamzal, that he has the same opportunities as his successful classmate to grow in Torah and become a Tamid Chacham. Sadly, he did not take advantage. And now, realizing his folly, throws his burden of guilt on everyone besides himself. That may be a convenient way out, but it certainly is not the truth. This, my friends, we have to realize. Hashem gives all of us opportunities to come close to Him in all of our lives. Do we access them or not? And if we don't, are we not the same like these goyim? Hey, it's not fair! Ask yourself, what were the opportunities that are given to you? And better yet, which is our last page, Rav Miller and Shabbat Shirim, look at the opportunities that are given to you and recognize what it is that is our challenge in life. And this is really why Bamidbar is before Shavuos. It's about making yourself a Midbar, having this humility needed in order to access this Ratzon. Let's explain. Rabbi Miller brings down a Gevaltik Gemara. The Gemara says, I'm in the bracket in 38, that how come on Yontif we say Hallel when we've already said the great Hallel, Kilolam Chastam? And the Gemara gives a number of answers, and he says that the five essential elements of faith are found in Hallel, and we therefore want to mention it. One of them is the giving of the Torah, as it says, the mountains prance like rams. Harim Rakadu Kalim. Well, hold on a second, says Rabbi Miller. Those mountains did not get the Torah received on them. So why is it that Harim Rakadu Kalim, the mountains are prancing like rams? That's an indication of the element of the Yesod of Emunah of receiving the Torah. They didn't get the Torah on that mountain. So he explains, and this is very powerful. He says, when you look at the Chumash, and you look at Sefer Rut that we read on Shavuos, the Torah contrasts personalities, and it's very stark. We spoke about Avram and Lot at the beginning of this year, and we have the contrast of Rut and Orpah, two people who start off in very similar places and end up worlds apart. Source 40, let's learn together. Here again, where was the root of this extreme divergence? The histories of the two men had such promising and similar beginnings. Where did their ways part? There's a kind of spiritual ambition, sincere and determined as it may be, that can never attain success. This is the aspiration even of the man who has a clear idea of the good that he desires and in whom intellect and energy are fastened and on achieving this goal of purity and devotion, but who has failed to examine himself, to discern in himself characteristics and attitude that are essentially incompatible with the good that he desires. It's about making yourself a midbar, about taking away all those undesirable parts. His eyes are turned outward. He does not recognize the fatal flaws within. Such a man can never succeed in his quest, for the forces and passions of his past life still hold him in their toils, and they have not been pruned or quelled. And whether he is conscious of it or not, he is subjugated to them. 41, even to write on paper where the previous script has been erased is not an ideal task, but certainly to attempt to write on paper that is covered in the asterisks with the scribbling and blotches of past passions is a futile occupation. From this analogy, the moral is clear. In order to attain some degree of holiness, in order to reach the higher or levels of moral and spiritual greatness, there's first a considerable task of destruction to be undertaken. Destruction of all the evil within, of all that will inevitably hold the progress of the soul, bad qualities, vicious habits, corrupt attitudes, all these have to be, by patient labor, uprooted before the positive task of planting can begin. This, my friends, was the difference between Avram and Lot and Rut and Orpah. Being able to do that work of being able to know what is my Ratzon, what is my core desire, which that is every Jew has to do the will of Hashem. See what is blocking me. Make yourself into a midbar. Be able to humble yourself. Be able to work on yourself. Be able to start from scratch and start planting in the ways that you need to. Ezu chacham alome mikol adam, the wise one is able to learn from everyone. Not to what, I can't learn from you, I can't do that, that's beneath my dignity. When you're able to work on yourself, then you're able to grow. Fundamentally, in 43, the act of receiving the Torah is an act of will. It's a result of an overwhelming desire that enables one to pluck at all previous and impure desires. The difference between Rut and Orpah, it is this longing for the Torah that's essential, this yearning that is expressed in the hollow by the image of the mountains prancing in their eagerness and keen longing, even though they were not in the event to have the Torah given upon them. This is a longing that can merge only in one who is rid of interest and aspiration alien to the Torah way of life, and one who has successfully performed a Lech Lecha. My friends, what is the answer to the Umos HaOlam? The answer to the Umos HaOlam is a Jew by nature is connected to the Avos in their ability to know how to follow Avram Avinu of Alech Lecha. This is the genetic DNA that we have to rid all of those negative forces and to have that passion to do the will of Hashem. And when Hashem tells us you have to curb those passions, you can't go up the mountain, kafalem harkigigis, that being forced to go against their very nature, they're ready to do it. They're ready to work on themselves. This is the core of what a Jew is. A Jew is a dynamic personality. Rut, who's a Gioret, is one who embraces this reality. To become part of the Jewish nation, it means that you're ready to work on yourself. You're ready to be counted among those who's not going to be stagnant, but it's going to move forward. And that, my friends, is a deeper understanding of that word, Vayitialdu, and they, so to speak, gave birth to themselves on their father's house. How so? Let me share with you a story. It's been turned into a song, Touched by a Story, volume number 1, many years ago. I want to read you parts of it, and then I think it will be clearer, but we'll come full circle and connect the dots. It's a story about a little 7-year-old boy named Dov. Dov had lost his father and at age 7, and his mother was very, very invested in making sure that Dov would grow up in the ways that her husband and Torah would desire. And she sacrificed a lot in order for him, going back over 100 years, to be able, more than that, able to learn, a few hundred years able to learn, and have the money to pay the Malamed. And she would pick him up every day. And one day she picked him up from the Malamed, from the teacher, and as they walked home and they turned the corner, they saw that the little shack, which was their home, was ablaze in a fire, and everything they owned was gone. Clutching her son tightly, she could hold her tears back no longer, and she sobbed bitterly. Dov looked up at his mother and watched as she cried, "Don't worry, Mama, everything will be all right." Suddenly aware of her son's presence, she regained her composure and bent down to speak to him. And she said to him, "My dear Dov," she began, "I want you to know that I'm not crying for the reasons that you think. All through the past year, no matter how difficult the circumstances might have been, I've always knew deep down that everything would work out. The reason I'm crying is not for the loss of material matter. I know Hashem will provide for us. He guards over his children, especially the Yisomim and the Almanos, the orphans and widows." Dov listened attentively as he stared at his mother's tear-filled eyes, and he desperately hoped that the never-ending struggles would cease. "Each night," she continued, "I used to read you from a book before you went to sleep. It was a Sefer HaYuchsin, a book of your ancestry. I wanted you to know where you came from and who your father, grandfather, great-grandfathers were. It provided you with a glimpse into the greatness you could achieve." And now that book is gone forever. Her words trailed off into distance, and a thick silence filled the air. "Mama, please don't cry. Really, everything will be all right." She listened to her son's optimistic tone, yet knew deep down that he was just too young to understand. "You don't have to cry over losing our Sefer Yuchsin." Didn't he understand, she wondered? It's not the book, but what it represented. But she couldn't blame him. He was just a little boy. Dov stared at his mother and declared, "Mama, we might have lost our old Sefer Yuchsin, but I'm going to begin a new one. And my grandchildren are going to learn about me." Dov spoke with determination. He appeared to have matured instantly. "I'm going to become the next Gadol Ador." Shocked at his declaration, she looked into her son's piercing eyes. Reflected there, she could see the image of their home going up in flames. But more importantly, she saw his determination and prayed that he would indeed become the next Gadol Ador. Dov's mother's perseverance paid off. Her tefillos and tears found their way to the heavenly throne, and little Dov fulfilled his promise. He grew up to become Rav Dov Ber of Meserich, the Magid of Meserich, the most prized disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, and indeed, the next Gadol Hador. Vayikialdu, do you know what this means, my friends? This is what we're speaking about. Every one of us has to become this imagery. Every one of us has to become the one who is going to be Vayikialdu Mishpecholtam, to give birth on their family. We have to have the aspiration that we are starting a Sefer Yuchsin from us. each and every one of us has to believe that with our determination, with our rutzah, with our ability to work on ourselves, that people are going to count the genealogy from each and every one of us, that we are the models. And this is the message the Medrash is teaching the Umos Olam and each and every one of us. Why did I give the Jews the Torah and not you? Bring me your Sefer Yuchsin. Let me see if this dynamic wheel of always working on yourself, of always becoming better, of having Mishmeret Shmiras HaLashon, and Tznius campaigns, and Shabbos campaigns, and trying to work on yourself, and see if we have this in the Umos HaOlam in the same way, where each and every Jew, and each and every parent is working on the midos and charts that each child should shine, that each child should be born into their family anew, with that pride, with that rutzah, with working on themselves. My friends, this is the message of Sefer Bamidbar before Shavuos. You want to be Mekabel Torah? You want to receive the Torah on Shavuos, each and every one of us each year? Vayijaldu mishpechotam. What makes you worthy is that you are one who is ready to be an Avraham Avinu, to be a root, to be the Ima Shel Malchut, that the lineage comes from her. That you have the ability to work on saying, I am somebody who has a desire to do the will of God, and I'm ready to take upon myself to rid all those negative aspects that God has forced upon me not to do. I embrace them, I accept them, and I work on developing myself, that I am the shining star that Hashem has envisioned in me.